welcome to Charity Chat. I'm your host, Samuel Davies. In this episode, we speak to Emma Brace-Girdle about ethical content creation. We speak specifically about video and the considerations charities should make and how they go about creating engaging videos of their work in an ethical way. We also talk about the benefits of doing this, both to the charity and also to those they seek to support. This episode of Charity Chat has been brought to you by our platinum sponsor, Work for Good. Work for Good is a fundraising platform helping businesses raise funds for charities through their sales. The platform makes the legal agreement needed for businesses to fundraise from sales quick and simple, saving charities time and resource and enabling them to raise more unrestricted income. Pop to workforgood.co.uk to learn more and to book a free demo. So without further ado, here is Emma Brace-Girdle speaking to us about ethical content creation. I'm delighted to be joined by Emma Brace-Girdle, founder of The Saltways. Emma, welcome to Charity Chats.
Thank you. Yeah, really excited to be here. Having listened to lots of episodes, it's lovely to actually be here giving my insight and knowledge. Yeah, really happy to be here. Thank you.
I know our audience are going to love hearing from you today. And I think the maybe the first question for you is, what's your background? What's led you to found The Saltways?
Yeah, well, so I think quite a lot of people in the sector sort of fell into fundraising about 15, 16 years ago. I was actually running a restaurant at the time and had started doing kind of volunteering for local charities, a local mental health charity, setting up fundraising campaigns for them, really loved it. And then I was working at the restaurant one day and a guy got really, really angry with me about the temperature of a cappuccino. And it was just, that was what I was used to. It's just my, that was like a day-to-day thing. And I just had this moment, it sort of clicked and I thought, that's not important. Why am I doing a career where things like this, absorbing so much of my energy? So then I started to sort of just look around for some fundraising jobs part-time. And then, landed one at an amazing youth homeless charity called Sash in York. And just continued from there, really. Went kind of started in community fundraising and then moved more into individual giving. And then more recently, I guess before The Saltways, was doing individual giving and some sort of freelance work as well as in charities. But I've mainly worked in small and medium-sized charities. So that's where my passion really is with, especially the small ones, I think. Yeah, they're kind of the backbone of the UK and got like a big place in my heart for small charities. But yeah, whilst working in one of those charities, it was in Sash actually, I had started to just use my phone to capture more content of the young people we're working with in collaboration with them. Just them saying thank you to camera, asking them their stories, and just started putting together little pieces just using my phone, a very steep learning curve, editing it all together. And then just saw how much better engagement that got on social media, the reactions from donors if I sent them something, just on email. And we ran a campaign using a film I made just using my phone, and it raised more than we'd raised before. So then I kind of put this case together and plucked up the courage to go to speak to my director and said, can I have some budget to actually make a proper film for this Christmas campaign we've got coming up? And to my surprise, he just said yes, because I think he'd seen as well this increase in income. So then I was like, oh no, I actually have to do it. So reached out to loads of production companies, kind of locally, nationally, and just found it all really overwhelming. And especially the pressure, because it was the first time I'd done anything like this. I didn't want to mess it up and for it to lose money. And I felt like the production companies that I was speaking to were either really, really expensive and just way out of our budget, or they kind of, and I think rightly so, now being in this position, kind of expected us to know exactly what we wanted and where we wanted it to be filmed and what the messaging was and how long we wanted for the edit and what music we wanted, all these questions. And I had no idea. And again, just felt this overwhelming sense of just, I don't want to mess this up. So I kind of took a big step back and looked at it as I would with individual giving and started to talk to donors, asking them, you know, what is it you love about what we do? What makes your heart sing? And then sort of, you know, tested that messaging with some little bits of content I made using my phone. And my other concern as well with I guess working with a production company is that I was really worried that the young people that featured in the film were going to feel like that there was some of these people just turning up and filming their story and then leaving. And I didn't want them to feel exploited anyway, because it was a small charity. So I knew them, a lot of them. So I felt quite protective of them in that way. So yeah, I took a big step back, did lots of research, lots of testing, really refined the messaging, and then found someone connected to the charity who'd actually left the services. They'd moved on, but was at college, was really doing really well, and spoke to her and asked if she would be featured in the film to bring the messaging to life that we'd established all that research. And then roped in my brother, who's a documentary maker, and said,
"Oh, wow,
I
okay."
don't want to work. Yeah, so he was at the time filming a documentary for HBO. So I think he was a bit like, you want me to come to New York to do what? But yeah, I loved his approach to, you know, he's very, I think with documentary makers, having worked a lot of them now, is that they really give the people space to tell their stories, and it's a very sort of gentle approach to filmmaking, which obviously is something that we continue to do. So he came up to York and we went and filmed with Ingrid, her name was, and yeah, we just, something just clicked. We loved it. With the young person, absolutely loved it, because I think she felt very empowered that she'd been able to tell her story. We brought her along for the whole process as well, and then the film, we edited it, me and Pete together, my brother, and it raised more money than we ever dreamed it would raise. I think they're still using it now. We use it as part of an event. We got her to do, you know, a thank you message as well. So that was sent out to donors. And yeah, something just felt like it's something that magic had happened. And I really wanted other smaller, medium-sized charities to be able to have that support when they are thinking about creating content, and it not to feel so overwhelming and scary. So started to just, I guess, reach out to contacts that I knew in the fundraising sector and say, have you ever thought about making a film? Because I think I can help you. And we just started doing it that way. And then it's just continued to grow and grow and grow. But we've still tried to keep that. But at the core of it, it's, we really help the charities in all that stuff beforehand. So even if they've got a brief and they think, oh, you know, we've got it nailed what we want to actually achieve with this, I think it's good to just have, I guess, like a critical friend just questioning it a little bit and saying, you know, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And we've also tried to always keep that dynamic in that our team is made up of charity professionals, so people that have worked actually in the sector. And then our filmmakers, I guess, come from a documentary making or that sounded snobby, like a higher end filmmaking background rather than more corporate, because the worst thing for us would be for someone to go on set and then be like, right, cut, when someone's in the middle of telling their story. We like to have like a much gentler approach.
I guess it's kind of a different, it sounds like a different medium within the medium, the charity video, because presumably when a charity is thinking about making a video, they're starting from the point of view of what impact we want this to make. What are the outcomes we want it to make in terms of engaging with funders or raising our profile? Are those the types of conversations you're having at that first point with the charity?
Yeah, I think as well, it's trying to really, we have planning sessions with the charities where I ask in a silly amount of questions, but it's trying to think, definitely focusing on the impact, because most of the charities that we make films with are, it's a 2 to 3 minute film. So what we really like to try and do is to get the charities to think about it in a way, rather than trying to tell everything they do in one, you know, 2 3 minutes, which people aren't going to remember, is focus more on the feeling they want people to have when they've watched it. So I usually get them to fill in the blank of like, oh my God, I watched this film last night about this charity. It made me feel so, like, what's that word you want people to say? And really just nailing that messaging. So if they're saying, oh, you know, our impact is this, It's asking that, and why is that important, and why are you needed, and why should people support you? Rather than it trying to be something like, oh, we want to say everything we do in 2 minutes, and people just won't remember it. They won't remember it because they'll remember a little story normally that happened in it, or they'll remember how it made them feel.
We're talking today about ethical content creation. What do we mean by this? How important is it that charities are thinking about this as part of their work?
Yeah, so I think really at its core, what ethical content creation is to me and our organisation is that it's putting the people who you are creating the content with at the centre of it and their interests at the centre of it. And also, as a little side note, your supporters' interests, because really I see charities as kind of the vehicle of connecting the supporter, the people that are passionate about your cause, and the people that you help. So those are the two people whose interests should be, you know, at the forefront of the charity's mind and their actions. And I think with ethical content creation, I think of it as whenever we're capturing someone's story, whether that's on camera, via animation, or in copywriting, you know, if they're sharing their story and then we're going to write it, is this, firstly, is it truthful? So is this actually what's happened? And then, is this the way that I would want myself or someone I love to be presented? And am I putting their interests first, or am I trying to think of an angle or a hook that's going to get, make our charity look great, or hit that key messaging, or hit that, you know, get people to feel in a certain way that they're going to open up their wallets? What's the balance there? And it always should be, it's the interest of the person who's sharing their story. And that should be, I think, especially at the moment where we're seeing, you know, the whole thing with white saviorism, and there's definitely a shift with, I think, even if you look at the big charities, I know Comic Relief changed their strategy and how they presented the people that they help. It needs to be honest, it needs to be truthful, it needs to really represent the people that you are talking about in a fair way.
And I suppose it touches on something we've talked about on the podcast before around, you know, there's the risk that in our attempt to be donor-centered, we move too close to the agendas or the expectations of a specific donor. And if in some cases that donor is maybe has old views or has a, you know, kind of is looking for a charity they can support, as they might have supported the Bob Geldof appeal in the 80s, you know, where you've got children with flies buzzing around their heads and kind of poor children, you know, pity these children kind of messaging. That's kind of old school now, isn't it? That's kind of, you know, now it's much more a case of enabling and empowering and a different kind of message.
Yeah, I think that just kind of gives people the ick now, that sort of that messaging. And I think especially with the younger generation of donors, they see through all that. They want to see the actual story. And even the move, I think, from that we're seeing slightly in the sector of people wanting to give directly to the people that, you know, that they want to help. And we saw it with Ukraine, where people were giving up Airbnb rooms for free, that they wanted to do that direct giving. And I think charities really need to step up to be more transparent and open and make it less about what they do as an organization, but how they're the experts, how they're positioned as the experts to really connect the supporter with the people they help in a really sustainable, ethical way, rather than it being something that's a bit risky. And the way that they do that is to demonstrate the impact they can have and the need through ethical content creation that's just transparent and it's honest and it's empowering the person who's telling their story. I think probably maybe a good way to explain how we do it is to maybe give an example of like how we actually do that process.
Yeah, so that'd be really useful.
Probably, it's not rocket science. It's just, I think, being a nice human. So if we were working with, say, for example, if we're working on a 2 to 3 minute film about the impact certain projects have for the charity, rather than it being, so sometimes we get charities come to us and they say, right, we want to make a film about this and we've got this person, they're going to be great. And I always encourage them to take a step back and think, right, what's the key messaging you want to what you want to demonstrate in this film, or in copyright. I mean, it can be applied to any sort of content. What's the key messaging? Let's test that messaging first. Let's just look at it a bit more. And we actually start talking about the impact you're having. And then let's think about, are there people connected to your charity that can bring that messaging to life? Because even though there might be someone that you think, oh, this service user is going to be great on camera, they're so energetic, they might not be able to talk about your messaging in the way that you want to. And then what you're going to end up doing is forcing them to say things that they don't really mean, which is just not authentic. Or you're going to end up having to, in the edit, piece together this like Frankenstein edit of things that didn't actually happen, or use things like, God forbid, slow motion, where you're trying to manipulate a feeling that wasn't really there. So I think the first step is to really step back and think about the messaging, and then find people in the organization that or link to the organization that can bring that messaging to life. That doesn't even need to be a service user. It can be a volunteer, it can be a staff member, it can be anybody that can speak passionately about that messaging and talk about the impact that you've had. Once that person's been identified, we help with that. So if we normally say, can you find us three or four people that you think would be able to bring this messaging to life? And then we speak to them on the phone just to, or on Zoom, to kind of get them to talk about their story, but asking questions around that messaging already, so that you're seeing if they can talk about that passionately. And it's also as well just to see things like, can they talk confidently about it? What's their, like, are they actually comfortable doing this? And ask them questions about, this is actually what's going to happen, and be really transparent at that stage. This is what it's going to be used for. This is how it's going to be used. The charity anticipate it be used for this amount of time. It's going to be on these channels. So even at that stage, being really transparent so they can make a very well-informed decision whether they actually want to go ahead with the project. But then after that, we would look at those people and we would say, right, we think Janet is going to be great. I think she's the one we're going to shoot. So then we would go back to Janet. And this is something as well that we're really trying to push the sector to do more of, is co-creation. And it doesn't have to be these big projects. I think co-creation should be across every part of all charities. And I think that you can bring that in, even at something like this, but on a smaller scale maybe than like bigger projects. But so we would then speak to, say, Janet in this example, and I would ask her, or whoever's working with her would ask her, right, this is what the film's going to be about. This is what it's going to, the story, it's going to be your story. You're going to have the space to tell your story, because we already know that her story is going to bring that messaging to life. Where do you feel comfortable being filmed? When is good for you? Do you want to be filmed at home? Do you want to be anonymous? Do you want to, giving them the power completely, and let them know that this is their time to tell their story in the way that they want to tell it, in the space that they want to tell it, and it not being like, okay, so you need to be at the offices for this time, then really talking them through the process as well. If this is what's going to happen, there's going to be this crew there on this day, we're going to be filming from this time to this time, these are the kind of questions we're going to be asking you, this is what it's going to be used for, this is where it's going to be shown, this is how long we're going to be showing it, they're going to be showing it for. Make sure you get her or the person's complete full informed consent. And then when we come before the filming, we would give the person the opportunity to meet the crew as well. So I think especially we've found with organizations that maybe work with domestic abuse or something where there's a lot of trauma, it can be really triggering to have just people turn up at the doorstep with cameras that they've never met before. So I think it's really important for them to meet the people, see them. It's just all about giving them the power. And then we always give people a lot of space to tell their stories. So we don't like to put a big time limit on the shoots. We kind of, even if it's just going to be a 2-minute film, we might be filming with someone for 3 hours, because we really want to give them that really that time to relax and then to tell their story. And even if it's going off in a different direction, we can pull it back, but we just don't ever interrupt them and, say, okay, great, next next question. And then within the edit as well, I mean, I touched on it slightly, but with post-production, we don't ever use things like slow motion. I could talk about that separate as a whole other
Is
podcast.
that a future podcast episode?
Just a bit of a pet peeve of mine. I think this,
is that because it's kind of it seems manipulative?
I feel like it's the story should be enough. That's what I think. The story should always be enough, and there shouldn't be a need to try and manipulate a feeling that obviously wasn't there in the edit. Because you have to be open to, you might go there to film this film or write this article or take these pictures about something that you've got in your head. And that might not happen on the day because that's not what actually happened. So you either go back and think, right, okay, well, we need to redo this with someone else because this person isn't going to bring that messaging to life. Or you have to be truthful to what actually happened. And I feel like using things like slow motion aren't giving the story the respect it deserves. It's kind of like you're trying to, manipulate a feeling that might not have been there on the at the time.
And how do you measure expectations then? So in terms of, it all makes sense, you know, what you're saying in terms of the making sure that people are part of the process. It's co-designed and collaboration is the key with the person that is being presented in the video. Is there a challenge there though, in terms of, in that conversation, we're saying we're going to film you for 1, 2, 3 hours, whatever that time frame needs to be, and then we're going to bring this down to a kind of 2-minute video. Is there a further consultation in the process of the edit, or are you at that point just relying on the trust, the mutual trust that you have, that they will allow you just to go ahead and make the edits?
Yeah, I think because you've already built that relationship, and like beforehand, you've kind of already done the interview over the phone, or you know, however it is, and you already kind of know what they're going to say. I mean, it's very rare you're going to get something like, "Oh my God," that it hadn't come up before. But then afterwards, when we've done the edit, we always say you will have the final say on this. So before it goes anywhere, obviously once the charity signed it off, so we wouldn't show it to the person until it's at that final stage. But then, you know, it's just asking them, are you happy with this? We've never touched wood. We've never had someone say, no, I hate it. It's always been, I think, because we've really understood them and taken the time to understand them and support them, that they already know what's, well, they were there. It's their story, so it's just trying to get it down into a short amount of, from sometimes we'll have 2 or 3 hours of footage and we're trying to get it into 3 minutes, and then also just letting them know that they can withdraw their consent at any time. So I think especially with things like, you know, where there's a risk. So if, we've done some films with refugee charities, it could be that at some point they have to take that film down if there's someone who's maybe fleeing their country because of, you know, their political reasons, that they might have to, at some point, something might change. I mean, we've not had it, but I think you need to give them that security and, again, that power that you can take this down. This can be taken down if it needs to be, because we don't want to put you at risk. Like, your safety is paramount.
For those people thinking about commissioning a video, that would be a concern, wouldn't it, for charities thinking about that, listening to this. But I guess on some level, actually, one of a better term, the silver lining of that situation for the charity's perspective, it could mean that they end up doing a very low budget video. Someone speaking to camera saying, we had a video prepared that we were going to broadcast, but unfortunately we've had to pull it because of this thing happening, which is what we're trying to prevent as a charity.
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of do a risk assessment anyway before you, that's all part of that process of choosing the person that you're going to be filming. So if that was likely to happen, I mean, you wouldn't film with them because you don't want to invest all that money and then all of a sudden have to pull the film. And like I said, it's never happened, but I think you need to give the person who's sharing their story the opportunity, or you need to give them the power that they can withdraw it. If they change their mind, they can withdraw it.
Absolutely.
It's not, okay, you've done this, it's out there, sorry. You know, it's their story, so it has to be respected in that way. And then also, even just things like, we always provide stills as well, so just checking that the person's happy with the stills, if they're going to be used as part of a campaign. If you're pulling quotes from the film, is that person happy with that particular quote being used? I think it's just giving the person and the story the respect it deserves.
So So we've talked a bit about this already, but what challenges do you see charities facing and how do you feel ethical content can help them?
Yeah, I think, as I said before, there's definitely, I think there's a, it's happening, and I think it's going to happen more, that donors are going to, and supporters are more sceptical about content, and they don't want to see, you know, the child with flies over their face. They want to know, how can I change this person's life and be part of their journey and feel like I'm coming along on their journey or something. So I think it's changing it from pity to empowerment. And it's, you know, an emotion. People will give to charities because they feel a range of emotions. It doesn't have to be pity. It can be anger. It can be joy. It can be so many other emotions. And I think that more charities need to embrace that and work with a range of emotions that they can, you know, get donors to feel and to, you know, inspire them to give. Yeah, it doesn't have to be pity, sadness. I mean, you know, if say, for example, you were going to do a photo shoot at a homeless shelter and there was loads of people there, you know, they would all come together to have lunch and they were having a great time. And this was an opportunity for them to connect. But then there was someone just sat on their own looking really sad. It's unethical in my eyes for the picture for that campaign to be of that one person sat on their own. It should be capturing the joy and connection that this group of people are having. I think that's the direction it's going. And I think charities that don't jump on board with ethical content creation and honesty and authenticity are going to be left behind.
What is that direction of travel then for ethical content? How is it evolving? What can charities of all sizes do to make the most of it?
Charities of all sizes can create ethical content. It's about, like I said, putting the person who's I guess the story that you're telling or the people that you're telling at the center, and just really taking a step back and thinking, is this how I would want myself or someone that I love to be depicted? But then also there's loads of resources out there. There's an amazing organization called Dignified Storytelling, and you can take the pledge and you can read all about the difference. They break it down into different steps of how you can, you know, do ethical storytelling. They're a great organization. And then there's other charities like Chance for Childhood doing really good work around informed consent and, photography of children and, I think there's a lot of leaders at the moment. So if I was working in a small charity, I would be looking at all of what the big charities are doing and then, you know, going along to webinars that they talk about and just learning more about it. I think just at its purest form, you just have to take it as, am I putting the person at the center of this, or am I actually thinking about, oh, but this would make our organization look great? It's kind of that simple for me.
There seems to be a laziness as well in the need for, you know, somebody to be looking really kind of down and out and upset and whatever it is for the charity to actually say, this is why we exist. There's maybe a kind of maybe it's harder work for charities to demonstrate their impacts by showing the hope that they are trying to bring than the pity argument. But I think, as you say, it seems to be the direction of travel. It seems to be the right thing in the context of our modern society and how we're talking about empowerment across, you know, many different aspects of society. For smaller charities with smaller budgets, do you think that, is there anything that prevents them from making these types of videos if they're on a smaller budget or if they're having to do things internally? Is it just about a case of kind of empowering people within the organisation to make their own videos?
Yeah, I think smaller charities especially have an advantage in that they know everybody in their team and they know the people they help and they know their donors really well. So they can really tailor content they can have conversations. I always encourage charities, please, please talk to your donors and ask them what they love about you. Because the amount of charities that I speak to, it's going, oh, well, you know, people give to us because of this. And have you actually asked them? And it's usually, you're surprised by the answers. So I think you can tailor the content to them. And then I would always say that you can upskill the people that you work with in your, you know, service delivery team, volunteers, get them just capturing stuff on their phone. And that is just feels so much more authentic and genuine. You know, if you work with, like I did in a youth homeless charity, I would say to the young people, oh, let's go out and just film some stuff on our phones. And it would be them talk to camera, or as long as they understand how that's going to be used and you can get their consent, bring them along for the journey and co-create with them. And it's just so much more, yeah, authentic and ethical. And you know, we run a free workshop monthly for charities to teach them how to create content using their phones. It's only an hour. You just learn the basics of how to, you know, do the right thing on your phone with putting up the quality and how to approach it. And I say to charities, like, don't just you come. If you've got young people that you work with that are interested in this, invite them along. If you've got trustees that really want to start, you know, getting more involved, get them along. It doesn't have to be just the fundraiser or the comms person. You know, we've got a generation at the moment who are all brilliant content creators. They know how to create content, so use that. Get them involved in it, and that's the really good way to start on your journey of ethical content creation, because it's them who are creating it. The only ethical concern there is that, do they understand how and where it's going to be used, and are they given consent? And as long as you can explain to them fully and get their full informed consent, or their, you know, parent or guardian, then yeah, I would say that's, it's a really good first step on that journey to creating content.
Emma Brace Girdle, thank you for contributing to Charity Chats.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Big thank you to Emma Brace Girdle for sharing her insights and expertise with us here on Charity Chat. When it comes to encouraging people to tell their stories, especially when they're very personal and filled with strong emotion, it's vital that both the process of recording those stories and the delivery of them to an audience are done ethically. Transparency and honesty is a key component of this, both of those contributing their stories and for those receiving them. In the case of the former, the person sharing their story needs to be made comfortable and given space to tell their story in their own way, and their voice needs to be reflected in what the audience subsequently experiences. As Emma says, the story should always be enough. Co-design with the person sharing their story is a crucial element to creating ethical content creation. And while this risks a longer process, the benefits to charities, both in terms of maintaining their integrity and organisational values, and also demonstrating this to audiences, makes it a good practice approach. The pity-inducing stories that we've seen in the past are now rather out of date. Empowerment rather than pity are what we should be seeing as the focus in all of our communications to supporters. So thank you, dear listener, for getting this far with us. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast and continue to enjoy it. We'd love to hear either way. Please do like and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Plus, share with any colleagues or friends who may be interested. It's just left for me to thank our corporate sponsors. This episode of Charity Chat has been brought to you by our platinum sponsor, Work for Good. Work for Good is a fundraising platform helping businesses raise funds for charities through their sales. The platform makes the legal agreement needed for businesses to fundraise from sales quick and simple, saving charities time and resource and enabling them to raise more unrestricted income. Pop to workforgood.co.uk to learn more and to book a free demo. Also like to thank Giant Squid Audio Lab for sponsoring our podcast kit, Magda Axmit for our beautiful website, check it out at charitychat.org.uk, and Forest of Fools for playing throughout the show and for playing us out right now. That's it from me. Keep on doing what you can. Speak to you soon. Cheerio. Bye-bye.